File 51.
All this devotion was a mistake, and was the result of our whole system of education, which in this case brought about a particularly severe retribution. Such lamentable trumpery was kept up at the various courts that the monarchy was slowly becoming undermined. When, finally, it did begin to totter, everything was swept away. Naturally, grovellers and lickspittles are never willing to die for their masters. That monarchs never realise this, and almost on principle never really take the trouble to learn it, has always been their undoing. One visible result of wrong educational system was the fear of shouldering responsibility and the resultant weakness in dealing with obvious and vital problems of existence. The starting point of this epidemic, however, was in our parliamentary institution, where the shirking of responsibility is particularly fostered. Unfortunately, the disease slowly spread to all branches of everyday life, but particularly affected the sphere of public affairs. Responsibility was being shirked everywhere, and this led to insufficient or half-hearted measures being taken, personal responsibility for each act being reduced to a minimum. If we consider the attitude of various governments towards a whole series of really pernicious phenomena in public life, we shall at once recognise the fearful significance of this policy of half-measures and the lack of courage to undertake responsibilities. I shall single out only a few from the large numbers of instances known to me. In journalistic circles, it is a pleasing custom to speak of the press as a great power within the state. As a matter of fact, its importance is immense. One cannot easily overestimate it, for the press continues the work of education even in adult life. Generally, readers of the press can be classified into three groups. First, those who believe everything they read. Second, those who no longer believe anything. And third, those who critically examine what they read and form their judgments accordingly. Numerically, the first group is by far the strongest, being composed of the broad masses of the people. Intellectually, it forms the simplest portion of the nation. It cannot be classified according to occupation, but only into grades of intelligence. Under this category come all those who have not been born to think for themselves, or who have not learnt to do so, and who, partly through incompetence and partly through ignorance, believe everything that is set before them in print. To those we must add that type of lazy individual who, although capable of thinking for himself, out of sheer laziness gratefully absorbs everything that others had thought over, modestly believing this to have been thoroughly done. The influence which the press has on all these people is therefore enormous, for after all they constitute the broad masses of a nation. But somehow they are not in a position or are not willing personally to sift what is being served up to them, so that their whole attitude towards daily problems is almost solely the result of extraneous influence. All this can be advantageous where public enlightenment is of a serious and truthful character, but great harm is done when scoundrels and liars take a hand at this work. The second group is numerically smaller, being partly composed of those who were formerly in the first group, and after a series of bitter disappointments, are now prepared to believe nothing of what they see in print. They hate all newspapers. Either they do not read them at all, or they become exceptionally annoyed at their contents, which they hold to be nothing but a congeries of lies and misstatements. These people are difficult to handle, for they will always be sceptical of the truth. Consequently, they are useless for any form of positive work. The third group is easily the smallest, being composed of real intellectuals, whom natural aptitude and education have taught to think for themselves, and who in all things try to form their own judgments, while at the same time carefully sifting what they read. They will not read any newspaper without using their own intelligence to collaborate with that of the writer, and naturally this does not set writers an easy task. Journalists appreciate this type of reader only with a certain amount of reservation. Hence, the trash that newspapers are capable of serving up is of little danger, much less of importance, to the members of the third group of readers. In the majority of cases, these readers have learned to regard every journalist as fundamentally a rogue who sometimes speaks the truth. Most unfortunately, the value of these readers lies in their intelligence and not in their numerical strength, an unhappy state of affairs in a period where wisdom counts for nothing and majorities for everything. Nowadays, when the voting papers of the masses are the deciding factor, the decision lies in the hands of the numerically strongest group, that is to say, the first group, the crowd of simpletons and the credulous. It is an all-important interest of the state and a national duty to prevent these people from falling into the hands of false, ignorant, or even evil-minded teachers. Therefore, it is the duty of the state to supervise their education and prevent every form of offence in this respect. Particular attention should be paid to the press, for its influence on these people is by far the strongest and most penetrating of all, since its effect is not transitory, but continual. Its immense significance lies in the uniform and persistent repetition of its teaching. Here, if anywhere, the state should never forget that all means should converge towards the same end. It must not be led astray by the will-o'-the-wisp of so-called freedom of the press, or be talked into neglecting its duty and withholding from the nation that which is good and which does good. With ruthless determination, the state must keep control of this instrument of popular education and place it at the service of the state and the nation. But what sort of pabulum was it that the German press served up for the consumption of its readers in pre-war days? Was it not the most virulent poison imaginable? Was not pacifism in its worst form inoculated into our people at a time when others were preparing slowly but surely to pounce upon Germany? Did not this self-same press of ours in peacetime already instill into the public mind a doubt as to the sovereign rights of the state itself, thereby already handicapping the state in choosing its means of defence? Was it not the German press that understood how to make all the nonsensical talk about Western democracy palatable to our people, until an exuberant public was eventually prepared to entrust its future to the League of Nations? Was not this press instrumental in bringing in a state of moral degradation among our people? Were not morals and public decency made to look ridiculous and classed as out of date and banal, until finally our people also became modernized? By means of persistent attacks, did not the press keep on undermining the authority of the state until one blow sufficed to bring this institution tottering to the ground? Did not the press oppose with all its might every movement to give the state that which belongs to the state, and by means of constant criticism injure the reputation of the army, sabotage general conscription, and demand refusal of military credits, etc., until the success of this campaign was assured? The function of the so-called liberal press was to dig the grave for the German people and Reich. No mention need be made of the lying Marxist press. To them the spreading of falsehood is as much a vital necessity as the mouse is to a cat. Their sole task is to break the national backbone of the people, thus preparing the nation to become the slaves of international finance and its masters, the Jews. And what measures did the state take to counteract this wholesale poisoning of the public mind? None. Absolutely nothing at all. By this policy it was hoped to win the favour of this pest, by means of flattery, by a recognition of the value of the press, its importance, its educative mission, and similar nonsense. The Jews acknowledged all this with a knowing smile and returned thanks. The reason for this ignominious failure on the part of the state lay not so much in its refusal to realize the danger as in the out-and-out cowardly way of meeting the situation by the adoption of faulty and ineffective measures. No one had the courage to employ any energetic and radical methods. Everyone temporized in some way or other, and instead of striking at its heart, the viper was only further irritated. The result was that not only did everything remain as it was, but the power of this institution which should have been combated grew greater from year to year. The defence put up by the government in those days against a mainly Jew-controlled press that was slowly corrupting the nation followed no definite line of action. It had no determination behind it, and above all no fixed objective whatsoever in view. This is where official understanding of the situation completely failed, both in estimating the importance of the struggle, choosing the means, and deciding on a definite plan. They merely tinkered with the problem. Occasionally, when bitten, they imprisoned one or another journalistic viper for a few weeks or months, but the whole poisonous brood was allowed to carry on in peace. It must be admitted that all this was partly the result of extraordinary crafty tactics on the part of Jewry on the one hand, and obvious official stupidity or naivety on the other hand. The Jews were too clever to allow a simultaneous attack to be made on the whole of their press. No, one section functioned as cover for the other. While the Marxist newspaper, in the most despicable manner possible, reviled everything that was sacred, furiously attacked the state and government, and incited certain classes of the community against each other, the bourgeois democratic papers, also in Jewish hands, knew how to camouflage themselves as model examples of objectivity. They studiously avoided harsh language, knowing well that blockheads are capable of judging only by external appearances, and never able to penetrate to the real depth and meaning of anything. They measure the worth of an object by its exterior, and not by its content. This form of human frailty was carefully studied and understood by the press.